You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
For Dear Science this week, we have our expert, Professor Alan Blackman, in studio.
Gotta stop using that word.
Now you love it.
and we've got a wide range of topics on the agenda for today.
We do. And we're going to start off with stoners, as you so rightly said. So, if you're going to do a survey of stoners, what's your big problem there?
I don't think a lot of people would probably reply, right? I'd imagine.
There's the stereotype. Yeah. There you go. This is precisely the stereotype that we're talking about here. I guess one of the big problems is that cannabis is basically illegal in a lot of places. And so if you do want to survey cannabis users, then it's going to be slightly difficult because it's again the law. But it's not in Canada anymore, basically. Okay, so in lots of places in Canada, it has been legalized. And so some workers at the University of Toronto decided to investigate the stereotype of stoners as being sort of lazy and unmotivated and all of that sort of stuff, if you've watched any Cheech and Chong movies or, you know, you know all about that. So so they surveyed 260 chronic cannabis users, and by chronic they mean 3 times a week or more. And they basically got an app, made an app, and this app would message them at various times of the day and or night and ask if they were high. And if they were, then it would ask them questions about things like their emotional state and their levels of motivation and their willingness to invest effort in something and sort of their self-regulation. So and, you know, as I say, the stereotype of stoners is that they're sort of lazy and unmotivated. And this has been the subject of lots of studies previously, sort of looking at essentially, you know, how stoners are, I guess, if you want to say that. And so these other studies have been sort of plagued by things like, well, you know, the fact that it is illegal in a lot of places, and so difficulty in recruiting people for these sorts of things. That didn't take into account maybe sort of the different personality types, the people who are more likely to smoke cannabis than not, people's mental health, and whether people are using other drugs as well. So, you know, these are all variables that have to be sort of taken account of and weren't in previous studies. And seemingly the biggest thing is that they didn't actively question them while they were high. So that's kind of the point of this app, is that, you know, you get the answer back, yes, I'm high, right, away we go, we're going to survey how you feel, you know, how do you feel right now? And I guess this whole app thing, you know, it means that, you know, they don't have to go into an office or something and be questioned by somebody. It's all, you know, right there under your thumb, literally. So, so what did they find? So what they found was that getting high led to lower levels of self-regulation, okay? So while you're high, or while these people were high, they were more impulsive and they were less thoughtful and they were less orderly, okay? Definitely. So that's sort of a big take on this. What they also found was that there was a big boost in positive emotions while they were high, which I guess is probably not too surprising.
So, yeah, makes sense.
So they talk about awe as being a positive. I love that. Awe, yeah, and you can imagine that. Awe, you know. So awe and gratitude. So they're big on that. Mm. And they found a reduction in some negative emotions like fear and anxiety. Mm. But with the proviso that if you're a really, really, really high user, then seemingly you did get an increase in some of these negative emotions, like fear and anxiety, both when you're high and when you're sober as well. Mm. Okay. So there seems to be a tipping point there beyond which you don't want to go. Otherwise, you know, things can get a little bit detrimental. But sort of the major takeaway is that there's no evidence for this sort of stereotype of being lazy and unmotivated, okay? Yes, they found that people were more were less self-regulated when they were high. But all of that means that can make tasks more difficult to do, okay? It's not that you're less hard-working or anything like that. It's just, you know, you're physically, I guess, a little bit impaired at the time, and you know, you might not be able to do particular things that you could do when you were sober, but it doesn't mean to say that you're lazy and unmotivated in trying to do those things. Mm. And so a quote from the paper is that you can be hardworking, motivated, and a chronic cannabis user at the same time.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'd imagine, you know, stereotyping someone who's stoned as being not hardworking is the same as saying you're not hardworking while you're asleep. Like, I mean, no shit, right? Yeah. Obviously.
Or when you're drunk or whatever. You know, it's a very similar sort of thing. So, yeah. So this was just recently published in the journal Social, Psychological and Personality Science. Okay, all so right. From the University of Toronto. There you go.
Mm. All right, and then moving on to the illegal ivory trade and new technology.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, how many elephants are there in Africa? This just blew me away.
There's got to be a good few.
Yeah, but there's a less good few than I thought there were. So there's 410,000.
It's quite low.
That's not a lot of elephants, I wouldn't have thought. Mm. And that was in 2016, and that was down 90,000 from 2013 in 3 years.
Jeez.
So, you know, that's really not good. Mm. And Asian elephants as well in Asia, so the females don't have tusks in Asian elephants, so they're sort of less into the ivory trade and stuff like that, but still there's a 50% decline over three generations apparently in Asian elephants. And yeah, so the reason for this decline is poaching because of bloody ivory, you know. And oh, it just makes me so mad. It really, really does, that to think these amazing creatures are being slaughtered for, you know, for ivory. And you get the rhinos as well, with the rhino horns and everything. So you've got these poachers out there. And as long as this can make money for people, then it's going to be a problem, sadly. So it's illegal to trade in elephant ivory, obviously, but it's legal to trade in mammoth ivory.
Oh.
So, okay. So mammoth tusks, which, you know, have been preserved for, you know, a long time, you can trade in that. And when both of them are carved, then it's very, very difficult to tell them apart. So it could be, you know, that these people who are trading in this stuff are passing it off as being mammoth ivory, legal stuff and everything. So how do you tell the difference between them then becomes the big question. And how do you do it in a non-destructive manner? Because the current techniques that are used to distinguish these require taking a physical sample and destroying the sample in the process of analysing it. So workers at Bristol University in the UK have come up with an answer to this, and they use a thing called Raman spectroscopy. And I could give you a two-hour lecture on Raman spectroscopy, but I don't think I'm going to. So suffice it to say that all that this requires is to essentially shoot a laser at a sample of either your elephant ivory or your mammoth ivory, which they got from the Natural History Museum in London. And you shine a laser on it, and then you analyze the laser light that is essentially reflected off the ivory, okay? And it so happens that when you do this, that the mammoth and the elephant ivory react slightly differently, okay? Differently enough that you can definitely distinguish them and say that, right, this is for sure elephant, this is for sure mammoth. And so, you know, this is, well, it's a quick way and it's a non-destructive way of being able to analyze these. So, you know, you should, you could be able to take out a little sort of handheld apparatus and everything, and very, very quickly just, you know, you stop something at the border, you say, yep, that's kosher, or nope, you know, you're coming with me, sort of thing. But I mean, anything that we can do to lessen the trade in this, to just make people realize that, wow, if this doesn't stop, there's going to be no more elephants. And having never seen one in the wild, I think that'd be a tragedy. So, so good old science in that case. Hopefully this can make a difference.
Yeah, for hopefully. Sure.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and then moving on here, we've got the Voyager 1 probe sending us more messages.
I know. So, this probe was launched in 1977, before you two were even born. A long way before you two were even born.
Yeah, bit of a way back.
And I was in the third form. There we go. Anyway, but... So this was launched originally to give us a look at the outer planets. So we hadn't had any spacecraft that had been all the way out to Neptune and Uranus before. So we had flybys of Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, Uranus, and then it was off into the unknown, the great unknown, out of the solar system and into interstellar space, where it still is now, and it's 24 billion kilometers away from us. And you know, that's a big number, and it's a number that you can't really get your head around. So when we are communicating with this, it takes about 22 and a half hours for the signals to reach Voyager 1 from Earth, and likewise on the way back. So that's almost one light day. Okay, you've heard of a light year, which is the distance that light travels in a year. So this is basically the distance that light travels in a day away from us. It's a phenomenally long way away. And it's traveling at about 15 kilometers a second away from us. And again, to put that into perspective, if we traveled at that speed, we'd be in London in half an hour. So it's pretty fast.
Quite fast.
Pretty fast, okay. And it's all relying on 47-year-old technology, which is the most astonishing thing, okay? In this day and age where if your phone is 5 years old, it's obsolete and you get rid of it, you chuck it. This computer on Voyager 1 is, according to the Guinness Book of Records, the longest-running computer ever. It has been operating. It hasn't been turned off for 47 years. So it started in August 1977, and they've never had to do a Control-Alt-Delete. They've never got the blue screen of death until last November, when it started sending back some gibberish.
Oh.
Okay. And so somehow, don't ask me how, but somehow they managed to figure out what the problem was, and the problem was that one of the chips had died, had been corrupted, okay? And so they figured that out somehow, God knows how, and then they were able to essentially reorder the memory to exclude that chip, okay? By sending a signal that took 22 and a half hours to get there, and then getting a signal back that takes 22 and a half hours to get back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, just... relying on this ancient technology, you know, it's ancient. You'd be laughed out of, you know, if you go with an iPhone that's 10 years old, people would laugh at you, you know. Yeah. But this is 47 years old, and it's operating on 70 kilobytes of memory. 70 kilobytes. So your average little, you know, laptop like that one there, it might have 8 gigs of RAM, maybe, yeah, 16 gigs of RAM, yeah, something like that. So this, you know, so basically that's a millionfold more powerful than what is powering the computer on Voyager 1 at the moment. And so thankfully they managed to rearrange the computer, so basically bypass that rogue bit of corrupted chip, and now it's sending back stuff again. Now the sad thing about all of this is that it's going to have a finite lifetime in terms of communication, because the whole satellite is powered by a big old chunk of plutonium. So it's radioactive, okay, and so as it decays, it generates heat, and that's what's used to power the whole communications, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they're estimating that that's going to run out in probably the next 5 years or so, and so we will lose contact with it. But still, it is travelling towards stars, but it's not going to get there for a hell of a long time, because stars are a hell of a long way away.
Yeah,
so thankfully, we're still in contact with it. And, you know, this is one of the great scientific achievements of all time, really. It's just remarkable.
Yeah,
and
incredible stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for coming in today, Alan. Thank you, Mota, and thank you, Science. We'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the B.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.